I think Smith might have got him there. No, Pausegui Perez now in the game. That's his first foul. It's Perez there. And Cochran can't get it to foul off the back of the rim and then hitting the front and rolling out. Andy Cochran, the 6'3 junior. Second one from Cochran. In and out. James Smith with the rebound. Out at the stop. 3:23 remaining. Stop in the right backcourt. And looks like there's a foul away from the ball. It looks like it's against Evan Stout for pushing off. That's three on Stout. So, top of the key is Tyler Davis. Gives it to Hazi in the left wing. Hazi dribbles. Kicks it off. Cochran. Oh! Excuse me, that was Tyler Carnell. Fakes a three, drives in. Can't make the basket, but gets fouled. So Tyler Carnell. It's a tale of two Tylers, Johnny, here in the reserve lineup. Tyler Carnell's first free throw. Yes. The 6'1 junior gets his first point of the game with 2:59 remaining, making it a 79-45 Warhawk lead. Second one from Carnell. Yes. So they know they got their free throw shooter there deep in the lineup. And coming in for Pausegui Perez is number 5, Giovanni Rios Ibarra, who scored a bucket against Port Washington, a rescheduled game. That was a Monday night game that we couldn't broadcast. Giovanni scored the last pass of the game, and Blackshirt Nation loved it. This 5'6 junior has been a part of the program since 8th grade. In many ways, the heart and soul of this program with his hustle and his hard work. Great little dish there by Duncan to James Smith. So Smith gets his 4 points now. Arnell has it in the corner. Dishes back to Tyler Davis, but a foul is called before the shot. Rios Ibarra gets his first foul, so he's getting his hands dirty here late in the game. You should have seen the shot he made, Johnny. He was up against two guys. He probably had a good 6 or 7 inches on him. He pump faked and made this beautiful spin off the top left part of the backboard. And after the basket, the buzzer went off 2 seconds later as Tyler Davis makes his second free throw. No, first free throw, excuse me. And the team came rushing out to, as if he'd made the game-winning shot. It was a really great sight, and the fans loved it. Yeah. Second shot by Davis. No, in and out. Stout fights for the rebound, but it goes off of him. Going up against Andy Cochran. Cochran got around James Smith, so he had a good angle there. So Carnell will inbound. Get it off to Hazi. Hazi drives, kicks it back out to Carnell. Back out to Davis. Davis drives, kicks it back out to Hazi on the right wing. Now into the corner. Brody Jens. Now the game. Oh, into the corner for three. Oh! Tyler Davis. An improbable three. 84-47. And there's quite an applause for David Doberson, who'll come in for Arrowhead now. A fan favorite. Pausegui Perez will now come in. He's going to come in for Evan Stout. Doberson will come in for number 20, Davis, after Davis made that three. Staub inbounding to Pausegui Perez, and he gets fouled. Doberson gets his first foul coming off the bench, which now puts Blackshirts into the bonus here, trailing 84-47 with 1 minute 44 seconds left. Off the back of the rim, rebounded beautifully by Staub. Staub's going to take it back up. Staub, oh, can't get it to fall. Tip in, no good. Beautiful rebound dish to Haas. Haas going to go all the way. Haas against, oh, beautiful rebound by Hasegui Perez. The coach's son, the 5'11 junior. That was a tough layup to make. Staub now to Rio Sabar. He's going to drive. He loses control of the ball. Daverton has it now. Daverton driving. Oh, he tries sneaking in, but loses control of the ball. James Smith now has it. As we approach 1 minute left in the game, Smith now to Duncan. Duncan pulls up. Yes. Faye Duncan gets a deuce. Fifty seconds and counting. Oz taking his time here. Working it around the perimeter now. Daverton has it. They want Daverton to shoot. Daverton with a shot. Oh! Great rebound now. They're trying to set up Daverton again, I think. 36 seconds left. Daverton drives. Reverse layup. No! Kicking the ball. They're going to do this again. They work it all around. Daverton now. He's going to drive. Daverton. Oh! By James Smith. Blackshear is determined not to let him score. Can't get the three to fall. Staub has it. 12 seconds left for the Blackshirts. Trailing 86-49. Staub. Trying to get the last shot of the game is James Smith for three. That's off. Mousey Brad. Oh! Can't make the last shot. So that'll do it. The Blackshirts lose their Arrowhead. 86-49. A tough end to what's been a good season considering all that they lost in starters. They are fifth seed. Yep. They're fifth seed in the regional, so Johnny and I will be back at it a week from tomorrow night at Waukesha South High School, where they'll be hosting a team from Janesville. Let's get the name of the high school here so Johnny knows. Johnny may want to do a little homework there. So here we go. Bear with me. I've got the bracket up here on the WIAA site. So Waukesha South will play Janesville Parker, a number 12 seed, next Friday, 7 p.m. And we will play the winner of Kenosha Indian Trail, number 4 seed, versus Milwaukee, Pulaski, Carmen, or South Carmen. Whoever wins that little matchup there for the 13th seed. So that's assuming we can get past Janesville Parker. So nothing, don't want to put anything past them. So, folks, thanks for joining us the regular season. The new season starts, one and done, starting next Friday night. Please join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And remember, I'll be back at it again Saturday morning from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown, also known as the WAUK Radio Studios, along with my friend Calvin there. 8 a.m., my guest will be Coach Buda, the head coach, Mike Budaszewski of Carroll University, and his special teams coordinator, D-line coach, Garen Holly, to talk Pioneer football and the inaugural Garen Holly Opportunity Coaches Clinic for minority professionals in coaching. So that starts at 8 o'clock. So please be sure to join us for that this Saturday morning at 8. Johnny, any final remarks about the game? There's a reason they're the Classic 8 champs.
Those guys are a lot of great basketball.
There really is. So, Johnny Watermelon, thanks for joining me tonight. Calvin in the studio back at the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown. Thanks for all your professionalism and expertise. I look forward to seeing you Saturday morning. Thanks, Blackshirt Nation, for joining us tonight. And remember, we'll see you a week from tomorrow. And also don't forget, safety is everyone's responsibility. Thanks again and see ya. This has been the Blackshirt Sports Radio Network here on Walk Radio 101.1 FM, 540 AM. Bye for now. Thanks, Calvin.
Thanks, guys. Great broadcast.
Thanks, Calvin. I'll see you Saturday morning, my friend.
Yep, see you Saturday.
All right, bye for now. You did it, Johnny.
Saying, well, you're using force indiscriminately against our balloons. So when the next time one of our drones goes over, you know, somewhere in their airspace, it's going to get shot down and we're going to have these international tensions. Congratulations. Welcome to the new Cold War. And whether Biden was going to shoot it down at the beginning or at the end, it was going to happen anyhow. This is how this is played out. This is how the game is played. The fact that we appeared on the international stage incredibly divided. Really, I'll tell you, you know, speaks volumes. The fact that you had a former president, you know, the president, he looks weak, weakening the sitting commander-in-chief's position. Again, historic. You know, I come back to this moment. I go, you know, what if Bill Clinton, after 9/11, after Republicans allowed 9/11 to happen, what if Bill Clinton would have come out and said, you know, George Bush is the weakest leader possible. How is it possible that he could have let this happen? And we need somebody new. That didn't happen. The country mobilized. His approval rating shot up into the 80 and 90% range. His father went into Iraq. The approval rating went through the roof. In that moment of crisis, we united. It used to be that our divisions stopped at the water's edge. That, like any family, we have our little tiffs, we argue with each other, we smack each other around a bit. But when it comes to the outside world, we put down those petty differences. We put down the party labels. But oh boy, our Boberts and our Greens and our Ronnie Jacksons. Oh, the only thing that would have made Ronnie Jackson more angry had the balloon been carrying a gas stove. I mean, that's how ridiculous this is. And understand, full spin mode, outrage candy on steroids to get people angry. And congratulations, it worked. And then, you know, you knew it was coming. We find out that three balloons happened over the U.S. during the Trump years. Wasn't a big deal. You didn't see Democrats out there going, the balloon. You didn't see that. Didn't see it at all. Because that's how this is played. And we had better get used to it quickly. And we'd better come around to some ideas on how we're going to move forward as a country. Because again, this is one of these moments. This should be a unifying moment. Because understand, most recent Morning Consult poll came out and said that 85% of registered U.S. voters are concerned about China's cybersecurity attacks on us, the economic threats that they pose to this country. But we were more concerned about balloons. Balloons. And this is one of those moments where you go, we should be having this conversation. And the thing that the Biden administration, I think, is doing and doing well, talking about how we're going to reshore manufacturing, how we're going to strengthen up our supply chains, how we're going to be able to compete in the future with the Chinas of the world, since we gave our manufacturing away. And I've said this, people go, you know, Biden was part of that. Okay, he was part of it back 30 years ago. A lot of people were. I'm talking about the here and now, the fact that right now we need to be moving in a direction and quickly to start making things here again. And this is, again, when you get past the outrage machine, when you get off of the outrage factory and the division that they have to push, and the fringe characters, the Boberts, the Greens, the Gateses, the rest of them. When you get out of MAGA world, the reality is the vast majority of Democrats, Republicans, Independents agree. We need to be doing something on our economic policies. We need to be doing something on cybersecurity. We need to be doing more on human rights violations. We need to be doing a lot more on the military front. Because this is the part that is kind of comical. you know, the people who tell us that they love the military the most, and every time there's a photo op, they've always got a picture. There's always somebody in a uniform with a gun and a flag, and they're smiling ear to ear. Because, hey, it's good for PR. But it's amazing to me that they honestly didn't believe that the military had been tracking that balloon when it came into our airspace near the Aleutian Islands. They had no belief that they were tracking it. Now, when it first came to me, I said, you know, probably the reason they didn't shoot it down is they want to see where it's going. They want to see what the Chinese are looking at. Because guess what? Knowing what your enemy is looking at is kind of important. Thinking about, you know, strategically where they're going to go. Because if you think that balloon wasn't up there and we were blocking any transmission that it may have had somewhere else, because we've got technology like that, you're delusional. They're not going to allow that to happen. But they were looking at our military bases. I went on Google Earth. I can look at our military bases. Unless it's got some kind of X-ray vision where you can see down into the bunkers and through, you know, through cement walls, not helpful. And then the part that was amazing to me, and this is the part again, these chicken littles, the sky is falling, there's a balloon. The part that's amazing to me is all of these elected leaders, like the governor of Missouri saying, you know, that's where we keep our stealth bombers. Why are they looking at that? What? Might as well tell them where we keep the nukes. Oh, yeah, they did. They did. Montana. That's where we keep our nukes. It's really quite remarkable. And again, I look at our keyboard tough guys and we're going to go out there and we're going to shoot down that balloon with our pea shooters. All projecting this kind of strength while cowering like children. Hiding behind mommy's skirts. I mean, it's really telling. Now, again, I use this idea of this was a trial balloon. The Chinese did this specifically to see how we would react and to sow seeds of division. Mission accomplished. They did just that. And Republicans, again, failed this country. The question is what brings us back together? And this is what I think, you know, the State of the Union is going to be about on Tuesday. The president's going to have to come out and talk about how we move this country in a positive direction, how the policies that they have pushed through over these last 2 years are going to make lives better, and how we're going to deal with crisis in the future. When you have a group of people who are hell-bent on running around screaming at the balloons. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I look at Tuesday's State of the Union address, and the president, really, he's got his work cut out for him. He really does. because the right wing echo chamber, the machine that they have built, the messaging machine they've built is really second to none. They've got Americans convinced that we're on the wrong track. Everything's horrible. The sky is falling. The most recent NBC poll out says 71% of Americans think the country's off on the wrong track. And this is one of those things that he has to listen to. The president's got to listen to the fact that the people are unhappy. In fact, there was another poll. I think it was a Quinnipiac poll, if I'm not mistaken, that was out that said, you know, or a civic science poll, it was, that came out and said that, you know, the highest level of unhappy people in decades, which up to 12%. 12% of people are unhappy. You know, happy people are somewhere in the 50s, always somewhere in the 50s, never above 60. Somewhere in the mid to high 50s. We're in the low 50s, 53% right now. 35% of people are neutral. I'm doing all right. 12% unhappy. And that's up over the last couple years. It was 10% for a while. So he's got to listen to that. He's got to listen to the fact that people are struggling, that inflation is really hurting a lot of working families. And he's got to talk about this. He's got to talk about the programs that are going to move us in a direction that are going to be helpful, the things that they've done thus far to create jobs, the manufacturing that they're bringing back, the infrastructure bills that are going to get people back to work in good union jobs that are going to be able to raise standards of living. That's all going to be helpful. But he's got to make the case that this inflation, got to have a boogeyman. And the right has said everything's Joe Biden's fault. You know, I can't tell you how many people go, eggs are $11,000 an egg. Locally, I think they were $319 or something like that. He's got to be able to make the case and going, look, here's where our problem is. Our problems, supply chains are broken. We are working on getting that fixed. We're reshoring manufacturing. We're investing in infrastructure. We're investing in job training. We're investing a lot of things to help secure our supply lines. That was broken long before I got here. Well, we outsourced all these jobs. We did all of the, like, corporate America and the greed and in the boardrooms decide our national manufacturing strategy. We are now moving in a direction to reclaim some of that. And then talk about the jobs that are being created around in manufacturing. You know, how we're bringing those jobs back to help feed that supply chain. But he's also got to talk about the fact that, you know, you look at the oil companies who have just been gouging us like crazy. You know, record profits that they have never seen before in history. The kind of obscene profits that they've never seen that these oil companies are putting in their pocket. And then telling us, no, it's Biden's fault the oil prices are so high. No, this is good old-fashioned American greed and opportunism. Corporate America is gouging us. And he's got to come out strong in talking about how, you know, the Federal Trade Commission is going to start looking into antitrust violations. We're going to start going after these gougers. We're going to start holding these people accountable. And we're going to use our government to hold them accountable and to help the average consumer and to help people get through. And he's got to do it in a way that people are going to understand. It's much easier to just go, no, Biden. Because that's all we hear from the right. They don't have a plan. There's nothing there. They've got no platform. They've got no ideas. They've got nothing other than just anger, other than just throwing a temper tantrum and going, Biden, Biden, Biden. Everything's Biden. And whoever would be next, it's going to be them. Because, again, they've got no solutions. There's nothing there. Now, this president has created, in 2 years, more jobs than any president in our country's history. In 2 years. And the response I get from my friends on the right is, well, you know, workforce participation's down. And you go, a little bit. It's ticked down a bit. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of people who are older aren't going back into the workforce for a bunch of reasons. One, COVID's not over. I know the right the House passed legislation saying COVID's over and it's done. For a lot of people, especially the older workers, it's not. And they're worried about it. And they're going, heck with this, we're going to retire. That's a huge portion of the people not in the workforce. But they want you to believe that there's a bunch of lazy people out there that, that your hard work is covering. No, the big part of that is people retiring. Now, I do find it interesting that the people who complain about workforce participation are the loudest voices, mind you, are the people from the states that have the lowest workforce participation. Now, understand, what they want you to believe, they want you to believe it's those blue states with their high union density rates and their union wages and their union health care and in their social safety net programs like food stamps and unemployment. You know, they want you to believe that those states are the ones that are staying home en masse. And the reality is the states with the lowest workforce participation rate is and always has been our southern states. What has been dragging us down for decades? Well, from the beginning of the country, basically. West Virginia has the lowest workforce participation rate, 55%. Followed by Mississippi, New Mexico, Arkansas, South Carolina, Alabama, Kentucky, Maine, Louisiana, and Florida. Now Maine and Florida, you go, I can almost see that. A lot of retirees there. But the rest of those are solidly, you know, red states. Well, not New Mexico. New Mexico is a swing state. The rest of those are West Virginia, Mississippi, Arkansas, South Carolina, Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana. A lot of red there. And not much safety net. Not much union density. So the arguments that the narrative that they throw at us, it's not there. It's not working. But we don't think that far down the road. The area with the highest workforce participation, oddly enough, the place everybody loves to hate, Washington, D.C. 72% of people there have jobs. And it's all those welfare people. Because to listen to a Republican talk about our welfare programs and to talk about workforce participation, you would think there are no workers in D.C. I mean, that's the part that just is kind of remarkable to me. So I think the president's got to talk about the debt ceiling as well. That's got to come up. And the danger that is going to be caused by us holding the country hostage. I think that has got to come up. And you've got to point names. You've got to point fingers. You got to point them out. We cannot in any way, shape, or form not pass a debt ceiling increase. Now, remember, Republicans, they want to hold us hostage. They want to hold the country hostage. And Social Security, I know Kevin McCarthy said it's off the table. It's not. There are members in the Republican study group, of which about 75% of House Republicans are members. They have signed on to wanting to raise the retirement age to 70. And then once it hits 70, to index that, to raise every year after that. They want to means test Medicare. They want to do a whole bunch of stuff that, again, we're not destroying Social Security and Medicare. We're just fixing it so it works better for corporate America. That's the reality. What the president needs to be talking about is I will not allow anything negative to happen. I will veto every Republican proposal on Social Security and Medicare. I will only sign a bill that expands it, that helps seniors and helps people move forward. But again, in this day and age, we're not going to see that. There is a lot coming, and the president's going to have to make this, plea and get people to think that he understands. He can't have a detached moment where people think he's out of touch. He has to empathize and has to sell it. Look, I understand. Things are tough. Things are tough all over, and we are working to make things better. We are working every day to try and bring inflation down, and we have brought inflation down. Gas prices are down. Things are going in the right direction. We are on the path that is going to get us where we need to go. We're investing in infrastructure, reshoring manufacturing. We are doing the things that need to be done. And what's interesting is the right losing their mind. Now, again, infrastructure, manufacturing, those are Trump's major platforms. The fact that Biden's actually doing them and not just talking about them, and then have Trump and the MAGA crowd attacking him is rather remarkable. Honestly.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Portland gets almost a foot of snow and travel is a mess from parts of the Pacific Coast to the Midwest. In Eagle River, Wisconsin...
59 years, I still don't like winter.
Oh, I think it's just terrible.
Getting too much snow.
Alec Murdoch takes the stand in his own defense and admits lying to investigators about when he last saw his wife and son Paul alive. They were shot to death, the former lawyer saying...
I would never intentionally do anything to hurt either one of them, ever.
Singer R. Kelly is sentenced to 20 years in prison on a child pornography and enticement conviction, but he'll be allowed to serve all but 1 year at the same time as his 30-year New York sentence for racketeering. His attorney, Jennifer Bongean.
His sentence was largely run concurrent, 19 years, 1 year added on in real time, and that is a win in our view, and it's the right outcome.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matt Nair. Here's what you need to know. National groups on both sides of the abortion issue are expected to pour big money into the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court. Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Janet Protasiewicz has the support of Planned Parenthood, while Dan Kelly has the backing of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. The winner of the April 4th election will determine majority control of the court, which is expected to rule on cases affecting abortion, gerrymandered legislative districts, and voting rights heading into the 2024 presidential election. The current court, with a 4-3 conservative slant, came within one vote of overturning President Biden's win in 2020. The price for Green Bay Packers tickets going up. They're rising $3 to $9 per game. Preseason tickets $1 to $5 more, depending upon where your seat is located. The total increase for the full season ranged from $20 to $100. I'm Jane Matt Nair. This is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Ashiro's work is never done. You care for the house, the kids, and our future. We're so grateful for all you do. Now, it's time to care for yourself and save a little more for retirement. A free 3-minute online chat can give you the personalized tips you need to boost your retirement savings now. Visit aceyourretirement.org today.
A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Do about the far more destructive corporate deceivers who are George Santos's role models. Their lies kill people, yet they're still welcome in the halls of Congress.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So still hung up on the balloons. The balloon thing is... really remarkable to me this weekend. I mean, I'll be quite frank. Never thought we were this skittish. Didn't think that. Knew we were divided. Knew we had some problems. But wow. When you see people dressing up in their cosplay military outfits with their big, you know, fake assault rifles going out and taking pictures of themselves, like J.D. Vance with his with his $500 shoes sitting in front of the wood pile, like he's going to shoot up into the sky and take out the balloon. Just amazing to me. Anyway, this, again, classic divide and conquer. I'm here to share some thoughts and bang this around a bit. I've asked my good friend Phil Glover to come talk with us. Phil's an AFGE District 3 National Vice President. Also got some intel background, which is the reason I brought him on to share some thoughts, because there's parts of this that I think we should have a real honest conversation around. Phil, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. It's an interesting subject.
So were you running around in your backyard with your slingshot, you know, shooting up into the sky because the balloons were coming around?
No, I can't say that I was too. I can't say that I was too nervous about it. You know, I kept reading reports about this balloon coming across the country. No, I can't say that I was that worried about it.
No, but here's the thing, and this is where I came down on this. Look, I grew up during the end of the Cold War. This kind of stuff happened. I remember as a kid, you know, having to dodge under the desk because, you know, Catholic school desks, you know, evidently stopped a nuclear winter. Because we understood the idea of mutual assured destruction. And every once in a while, you'd have, there was a Russian ship off the coast or a submarine or something. It always happened. You didn't have people running like they were really afraid of. This is amazing to me. Or am I missing something?
No, I think, I think social media and the way that media now is so segregated. You listen to the media you want to listen to that gives your point of view. And unfortunately, straight news is not really a thing very much anymore. So this kind of thing, it just drives wedges, more wedges into the population.
Yep.
So, you know, what used to be something that was normal. Let's face it, every country sends over, you know, spy planes, or in our case, you know, we have drones. We used to have U-2 aircraft and SR-71 Blackbirds that flew over Russia and China and wherever else. And that was normal. It had been normal. And don't think that the other side wasn't sending stuff over the United States. They were, just like we were doing over there.
Yeah, but so, I come back to this, and you know, I believe this was kind of a trial balloon. I believe the Chinese did this to go, hey, let's see how they react. Let's see what reaction of the U.S. military is. Let's see what the reaction of the American people is. And I got to tell you, I think we failed. I think we failed the trial balloon test.
Well, I think certainly, you know, I don't know, years ago, the idea of foreign policy and foreign affairs was politics stopped at the water's edge. And that has gone away over, you know, the last decade or so, to where everything is fair game. You know, nothing is a secret. Nothing is nuanced. You know, all you have to do is look at the Twitter feed of some people, you know, Boebert and Jordan, and look at their Twitter feed over the last couple of days with this. It's just gotten ridiculous. And I would hope that at some point the public, I hope, starts to realize they're being played. I don't know if they will or not, but I think they should.
But it's one of these things where our, you know, again, you know, I look at the media structure, I look at the messaging that comes out. It's, you know, crisis. We've got to have a crisis, and then it's panic, and then panic, and then you've got, you know, we've got to have, you know, each side ramp up and attack the other, and it seems like we're attacking each other and not the problem. Look, China's a problem. We've got some serious issues with China on the economic front, especially. And I think this administration is addressing some of that on the cybersecurity front, on the supply chain front, especially when you're talking about military needs, bringing the manufacturing chips here. I think there's a lot that has to be done. And we're just not, I don't know that we're a serious enough country yet to be able to deal with real problems, because we're still worried about balloons.
Well, I think we certainly, as the administration has attempted to bring manufacturing back to the United States, I think the other thing is people don't realize how long that takes. We are in a global economy. The chip issue, when it came up, how long does it take to build a plant, train people to create chips, the right ones, the ones that are needed at that moment? Those things all take time. And unfortunately, we become a society that thinks, boink, I hit my button, I want this now.
Yep.
That's not how that works.
And DoorDash will deliver it.
Correct. And we've been battling China economically for decades. We all, this isn't new. And then, think of them stealing, a lot of our technology and patents and things that we were creating and cheapening it and selling it back to us, essentially, or selling it across the globe to other countries. I guess that's part of what this balloon thing was. I don't know, as it went over Alaska, Wasilla, I guess. I don't know. I just think that people get too focused on these things. If you were in the military, if you ever got a briefing about what was going on in the world, these things were going on a lot. Now, I was in the 80s during Reagan's period of time, and believe me, this stuff was going on a lot. We were looking at various countries and all the time as threats, and they were looking at us. And that's, kind of how it was.
Yeah, but the thing that gets me is it's a balloon. 80,000 feet in the air. What possibly could that balloon have gotten from 80,000 feet in the air that their satellites couldn't get, that Google Maps couldn't have gotten them?
Probably nothing nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that we a total freak out without the thought of, what are they actually gathering? And from a military perspective, because you were a military guy, is there some advantage to going, well, let's see where it goes. Let's track it. Let's find out what data comes out of it. Let's see what they're sending back, because we've got the capability to do all that stuff. There's value in that, right?
I think it's like you said originally, though, they sent this over to kind of provoke something. Yeah. It's not a technological advancement. So whether it was a weather balloon that went astray, or whether it wasn't, whether it was a piece of technology that shouldn't have come this direction, it's a pretty outdated form of it.
Yeah.
Considering, they're trying to go to the moon. We're trying to go back to the moon. They have satellite systems just like we do across the, around the globe. So it's kind of it's an odd way of doing anything that is supposed to show technological superiority.
Yeah, good point. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Phil Glover. Phil's the AFGE local national District 3 National Vice President. You can check out their website, afge.org. I want to get your thought on the State of the Union, kind of turn. I'm sure the balloon will come up, as, hey, we shot it down, we did that. But there's got to be much more. There are a lot of people who are struggling. Inflation's still hurting working families. What are you expecting to come out of the State of the Union address? And as, as a head guy over there at AFGE, what are you hoping to hear for your members?
Well, I think... I think what you're going to see is the president putting forward what things have happened since the pandemic, when he came into office, the jobs reports, 3.4% unemployment, trying to get the economy back up and running the way it should after, a complete shutdown. And again, that's, I think one side of the aisle is going to sit on their hands. The other side of the aisle is going to jump and clap. And unfortunately, nobody wants to recognize or they're into these political corners. So as the country comes out of a once in 100 year pandemic, we're going to see, you know, we see a tax on labor. You know, if, just a year ago, people were praising nurses and teachers and everyone else. And there are attacks on labor now. There's a tax on, you know, teachers. There's a tax on their income. We're coming back to that again. We've come around circle. So we must be out of it. And, you know, you look at this idea of inflation at the same time, you see major corporations with huge profits. Exxon reported huge profits this past year. All of these other corporations. So that's not inflation. That's gouging. And so, you know, the narrative is inflation, inflation, inflation. But the truth is that's not what is going on. The truth is these companies were shut down during a pandemic and they're trying to make their profits back. And so they're jacking up prices. And the regular person out there, like you and me and others, are paying the price for it. We got a little tiny bit of help during the pandemic. Small businesses got a little bit of help. People got a little bit of help. But the fact is these companies want to make back all the profits that they didn't make during that 2 or 3 years. And they're hammering us. And I wish the Congress and the White House and others would really step up that message instead of this inflation message, which I think is bunk.
No, I'm with you. And this is where I'm there's part of me that hopes the president comes out and says, look, you know, the Federal Trade Commission is going to start launching major investigations. We're going to come up with a Truman-esque committee to do, you know, to look at, you know, pandemic profiteering. We're going to go after these companies and find out why these prices are so high, why inflation's gotten out of hand, and start locking people up.
Even toward the end of last year when the House was still in the Democrats' hands, you didn't see them bring these companies up in hearings and ask, you know, that the Senate can do that now that they have a majority. Last year they were 50-50, and they really didn't have subpoena power unless both sides agreed and other things. Now that the committees are not equal, you know, the Senate should start doing that. They should start bringing some of these companies in and asking them where their profit lines are and why all of a sudden they're coming in with this kind of margin and how that's inflationary. The public deserves to know that.
Yep.
And that we also ought to be talking about. Every time I see a tweet from a Republican that says, you know, inflation's up this much and it's Biden's inflation, I always tweet back, are you proposing price caps? Or are you going to actually increase the minimum wage? They're not going to do that.
Right. There's no policy. And this is where my question comes of, you know, should Biden come out and say, look, put a bill on my desk to be able to do this, this, and this to address inflation. If you want to do something in the House that's going to be helpful, since you don't have any plans, because the reality is Republicans have no plans. There's nothing. I mean, we've denounced socialism. Congratulations. You passed a resolution that has no enforcement, has no goal, no anything. You did your performative thing, bread and circus, congratulations, yay, good for you. But you don't have any legislation that's going to actually do anything other than get you your 15 seconds on fake news. So should he be coming out and saying, look, I want this. I want a price gouging bill on my desk. I want an increase in the minimum wage. I want to be able to do these things. I need these tools to help the American people get by.
I certainly wish he would do that. I mean, I think he could put them on their heels a little bit if he did that. You know, we just had a bill the other day pass, which we were not for, called the Show Up Act. You know, federal workers worked all through the pandemic. We had office workers that obviously were working from home. They didn't bring them into office spaces where they could be infected by the virus. And so, the first bill out of the chute from the new Republican chairman of the Oversight Committee is this bill to get us all back to work. Well, we've been working. Social Security offices have been processing Social Security. VBA has been processing veterans benefits. You know, everything's not ideal, but it wasn't ideal in the office setting either.
Yeah.
Actually, productivity in some cases went up because people didn't have to commute in an hour or commute home an hour. They got up, they go to their station, start working.
Yep.
You know, they don't have coffee breaks with their buddies. You don't have lunch to go to and then come back and then get back into the day. There's trade-offs. But that's the first bill that they put forward on the federal workforce.
Yeah, but their narrative, yeah. Phil, and you know this as well as anyone, is nobody's working. Everyone's lazy. Nobody wants to work. Everyone wants to just sit at home. Because they're not really working at home, Phil. They're sitting on the couch with their feet up watching Oprah.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's the technology doesn't allow that.
Yeah, again, you're explaining. The narrative is you get to sit home and do nothing.
Right. Well, that's their narrative. And, you know, I think I you know, hope that the Senate doesn't take this up. It's ridiculous. They should have held hearings on it. They didn't. You know, if Chairman Comer really wanted to talk about the federal workforce, hold a hearing.
Yeah.
Have some people come in. Have the agency heads come in. Have the union come in and have a discussion with the, you know, with the committee. What's been going on for 2 years? But no, that's not how they handle business. They had said they wanted to go back to regular order. And, you know, the only Republican to vote against that bill, by the way, is Brian Fitzpatrick out of PA1. And because he knows us and he talks to us and he asks us questions. You know, unlike what has taken over the House. And I can only, you know, hope that as a federal worker representative, that we can get to the point where there is regular order, where they hold hearings and bring in people to go over these things. And I hope it's not a circus.
I'm with you. Last question I've got for you. You know, what are you looking for in the State of the Union? Is there something specific that you'd want to see the president put in there? If you had, you know, a chance to pencil something in, what would it be?
If I had a chance to pencil something in, it would be something on the federal workforce that, you know, he appreciated what has been done by our federal workers over the last few years during this pandemic, and going forward, what his vision is for federal workers. As I think I've told you, the secretaries that he's appointed are not following his labor management agenda, and certainly the managers down below aren't. I hope he says something to the federal workforce about that.
Well, we'll see. Phil, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Rick.
Anytime. Our good friend Phil Glover. He is the AFGE District 3 National Vice President, AFGE.org, the website, if you want to take a look at what they do. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Quick break. Right back.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That day began the week-long general strike in Seattle, Washington. As World War I drew to a close, many workers in the city were frustrated by 2 years without pay increases due to the war. 35,000 workers in the shipyards walked off the job. Workers from most of the 110 union locals across the city voted to support the general strike. At 10 a.m. on February 6th, the citywide strike began. As many as 65,000 workers, or a fifth of the entire workforce of the city, walked off the job. They were met by a combined force of the police and the military. It has been nearly a century since the Seattle General Strike. This unprecedented stand by the city's workers has been remembered and commemorated in many ways. perhaps the most innovative memorial came in the form of a rock opera. In 1985, Rob Rosenthal set the story of the strike to music. He based the lyrics on research and interviews he did as a graduate student at UC Santa Barbara over the course of 10 years. A band named The Fuse formed to record the 21-song album. The final project was a blend of rock, blues, and folk. The music tells the story of a fictional man who comes to Seattle looking for work in the shipyards during World War I, joining the labor movement and the strike. What labor history event would you like to hear set to music? Without a muscle, without a brain, nothing would ever go. We run it all. We run it all. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Blues in the city, unless we say so.
Let the bars curve. Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Again, I come back to, there's a lot that needs to be put into this State of the Union address. And if I'm writing it, he's probably going to give a six-hour speech if it's me writing it. So I don't envy the speech writers, because, look, there's a lot of messaging that has to go into this. Because, look, the right-wing outrage machine doing a masterful job of convincing people that their lives suck and inflation is hurting people. Something has to be dealt with. Now, globally, inflation is much worse than it is here, but still, people need to connect. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. How are we doing, Alice?
We're doing okay once I escaped from the containment camp yesterday. I'm not joking. The right wing has lost their ever-loving minds. And I guess coming new to you, close to everyone that's in a red state or near a red state, as you know, my husband was in the hospital, just got released yesterday, and he was in a hospital in West Virginia. And I went to pick him up, and I don't know if it was the Chinese spy plane or what have you, and I'm not joking, exaggerating about any of this. I walked into the hospital, and I started around their little poles and whatnot that they have there, and this little blonde thing just about tackled me to grab me by the arm and scream at me, going, ma'am, where are you going? Where are you going? You need to come with me. I'm like, excuse me?
Were you in a restricted area? Were you somewhere where your presence was a danger to somebody?
No, the thing yesterday was you had to show your photo ID and get your picture taken.
Yeah.
To go into the hospital. I'm not joking.
And no, that's coming everywhere. I mean, our need to feel secure. Again, I go back to the Patriot Act. You know, the fact that we gave away so much power just because people needed this illusion of security. It's only getting worse.
Well, it is, and so I had to show my ID to pick up his prescription. So they were like, well, we'll bring him down. And I'm walking out of the hospital. And now this young guy comes running up to me and goes, ma'am. I'm like, what now? I'm already aggravated. I've had enough.
I can imagine.
It's been a drama-filled situation from start to finish. I'm done. And I said, what? He said, where's your visitor's badge? I need it back right now. So I looked at him and I said, it wouldn't stay on my coat. I reached in my pocket and it had stuck itself back together, and I just handed it to him and gave it back to him. And I thought, this is ridiculous. And I called today and I talked to hospital administration and I said, can you tell me, first of all, why we're doing this? Is this like a containment camp or is this a hospital? So I guess it's the new and improved way to make sure that no one gets, I don't know. And I will admit, I made a number of remarks.
See, I think wherever you go, you should be tracked and surveilled. You sound like one of those people.
I was just ridiculous. I said, did we get a call-in threat from the Islamic Nation for a bomb threat? And then I made a remark about fascist regimes and red states.
Yeah, you're not helping your case here. You're not helping your case. You're making things worse.
Well, the administration today were not happy.
Yeah, I can,
their story was that none of it should have happened.
How's your husband doing, real quick? Is he getting better?
Yeah, he's home. I brought him home, and his pneumonia is getting better.
Good. That's what I wanted to hear. I appreciate the thoughts, and I wish you guys the best.
Thanks, Rick. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Alice. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.